All right, weekends, we're back with another episode. We've got Jordan Mix on the program. Jordan, how we doing?
We are living. Thank you for having me.
We're living the dream. I'm so stoked to have you on. We've been friends for a while, and basically this podcast has evolved into like my homies come on. You got a bunch of disparate knowledge in all these little pockets, these niches. We're going to try to mine the knowledge and share it with everyone. So I think one of the most interesting things about you is that you had a life transition, or like a work career transition, I'd say, in the last, 12 to 18 months, where you were, and I want you to walk through the story, but just to set it up, you were doing something that was working, but you didn't love, and you were like, I need to get out of it. And now you're working with Greg Eisenberg, Theo, and the whole Late Checkout gang. And it seems like from the outside, you're really loving it. You're in a better role for yourself. A lot of people want to make that arc. Like, they have skills, but they're in something they don't want. Do you want to just talk about like the permissionless apprentice approach and all of that? Cause I think it's a fascinating story.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I studied mechanical engineering in college so I could do marketing. Like, that was like the whole goal the whole time. Started a med device company right out of college with a nurse who had an idea, and we designed this device. It's basically like a MagSafe charger for IV lines. And we raised $6 million, took that through the FDA, and then I built an agency that serviced hospitals using that knowledge to basically sell it over and over again. We built that up to like 30 people, two locations between Nashville and Houston, Texas. And it was like 30 people, mid seven figures in revenue. It was going good, but like people I was interfacing with weren't firing me up really. And found Jack Butcher's stuff, tried to do build once, sell twice to that business to like make internet marketing work for this med tech agency. And it just like, I was living a double life. I could never, like, it was a square peg in a round hole. I could never transition fully into that. So yeah, I tried to sell that business and it just didn't work without me involved in it. And I had a little like collab list that I put together, and Greg was on that. And so I just did a project for him. I saw one of his tweets in like November 2022. So January 2nd of 2023, I just visualized one of his tweets that was like, how to start a company in 2023. And then he DM'd me and was like, yo, who are you? And this was from an account with like 18 followers. So it was like a faceless account do within that I'd started, like, because I just wanted to do dope things with dope people. And then we jumped on a FaceTime and started jamming. And that's how I made the transition.
Yeah, I feel like a thing that most people overlook or psych themselves out about is that most of these people with hundreds of thousands of followers are super approachable. Like, I mean, I guess now I have 500,000 followers and I feel the exact same as I did with nobody. Like, the only difference is I just had made content for a while. And if anybody messages me, I respond. Like, it's not as though these people are higher than life. And so but they don't get a lot of messages. Like, believe it or not, they get a lot of spam stuff, but they don't get a lot of like high quality, value first, non-ask messages. So if you do that, it'll probably cut through. If you do it a couple times, it's like for sure going to cut through. And I just find it fascinating how, you know, you did that, took the rep, made the swing with really like no expectation. And then it turned into completely new career for you, which is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, this was a guy who was doing stuff on the internet and I wanted to do more things on the internet. So I was like, how can I win without losing? And yeah, that was it. Like, let's get the network going. I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to collab with them, but I love that. Of course I would have.
And so one of the things, and we were talking about this before, one of the things that you're kind of Greg's like number two or like right-hand man right now. There's a ton of people at the company. Greg has a partner, Theo, but like, as far as I see it from the outside, you're kind of like the executional ninja or one of them under the scenes at Late Checkout. And I think I saw a tweet from you a couple months ago, I think, where you're talking about this idea of building like a marketplace for number twos. And all that means is like the operational behind the camera or like back of house person who honestly makes a lot of these businesses go. Every number one or front of camera facing person really does need that arm, and almost nobody has it. Nobody knows where to go for it. Nobody knows, unless you get a lucky break where you meet somebody who has the complementary skill set, it's really hard to find. Just talk about that a little bit and how it works, like your structure today as the number two. You said you've been a career number two. You've done that many times. And like, as selfishly as me, as someone who's looking for that, what should I look for?
Yeah. That's why I want to like start this network of like, so people like you could just be like, who do you got? Like, but it's got to be like a holistic, natural thing. Like that's what banks like the best number two is. There's got to be a true overlap where it can't just be like necessarily like a business partnership. It needs to be kind of like a friendship in a way. And I think finding people that like align with how you think and like where you want to go, but have complementary skill sets. Like, for example, like I don't have a huge audience, but I have some entrepreneurial experience and know how this world works. And like to be a good number two or producer, Eric Turnberg was on Greg's pod actually and came up with this like producer kind of tag, which I like a decent bit. So I'm gonna use it. But to like be a producer, you have to think in the same way that the like creators or front of house people think, and almost like project out and like have foresight into the way that things move. So to find them, it's quite tough.
Yeah, it's super hard because I feel like you said, you need the rapport for sure. But most amazing operators are either already in a role where they're in a partnership locked up that they like, or they're just getting something off the ground where they're like working on multiple things at the same time. It's very hard to catch a number two in that transitional period. I've been looking for this personally for a while, mostly because it's just so obvious when you start out that there are things you're really good at and things you're not good at. And usually when you're the type, like the creator type, the creative type, the things you're not good at are the operational pieces or the things that are critical to grow the actual business behind the creator. That's why I think there's a lot of creators with, you know, millions of followers, but it's just an iceberg. Like they have nothing. Well, I guess the opposite of an iceberg. There's nothing under the surface supporting that because they don't have the infrastructure. They don't have the business builder and the operator. I want to dive into the experience with Late Checkout, because if you're listening to this and you haven't heard of Late Checkout, I'll give like my summary from the outside. But basically Late Checkout started as an innovation agency. So like next generation IDEO. And you guys are servicing Fortune 500 companies, like big tech brands, and you're doing a lot of innovation, like edge of the internet type work for them. And that's like the hub of the wheel. But the spokes are all these like interesting bets, whether you're building companies from scratch, acquiring them, some hybrid combination of the two. And there's like four or five really interesting plays that you guys have at Late Checkout. You get to see all of those under the hood. Most people don't. They just see them like through whatever Greg writes and puts out. But do you want to just talk about like, why do you think that model, this like hold co model with the agency in the middle, is optimal? And what are some of the exciting things that you've seen as you've gotten under the hood and like really looked at these businesses?
Thing that's most optimal about this, the hold co model, is like we're trying to build a holding company that builds holding companies, which sounds meta and kind of sounds like a pyramid scheme we joke about. But, you know, with the revenue engine at the center, you know, it started as an agency, a studio for incubations and a fund. So that we were investing, I think we have like 25 holdings in companies that agency was working with or was closely approximated with the agency. And like we just were getting equity in those companies, but not like owning the future or governing it or having any cash flow from there. So like the holding company model is like, how do we produce these assets that they can benefit from each other, but also spin off cash? So for Boring Marketing, for example, it's the AI plus SEO started as a product that we're offering as a service, and it's AI plus SEO. And then we have Dispatch, which is a marketing agency that does design, landing pages, conversion, etc. Those two have overlap with each other and can cross sell. So like what we're trying to do with the holding company is like create a constellation in the sky that makes up the Big Dipper, not just random stars in the sky, but like it's cool. That's the Big Dipper or whatever. I'm not into astrology, so I don't know any other constellations, but I should study up. But that's really what we're trying to do.
Not a big horoscope guy.
No, I don't even know mine, dude, thankfully.
So the big question though, it's like I've outlined my goal, which was, and it's probably ever evolving, but the goal was to build a holding company. Similar idea, right? I wanted to have content or audience in the center, build a cult community, and then the spokes be different brands that support that community, ideally, like you said, that feed into each other. The big question, obviously the hardest thing is getting the first one working, like getting the cash flow working. I have the content kind of working, the cash flow is not there yet. So for me, like to comment on this holdco piece, pretty you know, not high value yet. For you, very high value, because the center of the spoke is spitting off a lot of cash and you guys have built a bunch of successful ones. The big question once you have the spoke, or once you have the hub spitting cash, to me is like, what signals are you using to identify what new businesses to add that complement each other, right? So like if you're building the Big Dipper and you have five of six stars, you know where the sixth one should go because you can see the shape. But if you have like one or two, how do you know, how did you guys know where to go? What was the philosophy?
That's a great question. We were using our resources to figure out what offers that we could create category of ones around, and then what we could build around that. So like for Boring Marketing, we bought half of a business and then incubated Boring Marketing, but we had designers and branding experts and community product and offers already at the agency. So we tapped into that resource to create a category of one in Boring Marketing. And then the craze of AI came about. So that's how we started. You probably need a robot, and rode the tail waves of everyone talking about that on Twitter, built an audience, built a newsletter, and then an agency and other offerings around that as well. And now those three kind of cross sell. So it's like, you probably need a robot. You have operational efficiency, design. You want more clients. You want to convert more clients. And then SEO, you're getting free traffic. And then on top of all that, we're doing product innovation for like next generation of bets, using community to plug in. So using trends, markets, and also like the resources that we have is how we identify what the next step is. And there's been a lot of stuff we've looked at that hasn't fit in, or hasn't been like a gut feel, and we just pass on it.
So this is the fascinating thing to me, is basically the only content or audience play that you guys are really leveraging is Greg's audience. And not to downplay it, like he has a few hundred thousand followers on Twitter. He has an email list. I'm sure it's like close to 100K. He has the podcast. But like, you would think that you have all of this top of funnel driving all of these businesses, but actually, like relatively speaking, you have one, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like there's one strong but medium-sized audience that really seeded most of the traffic for this wheel. And now the wheel is like, from the outside, the wheel has grown significantly bigger than I thought it could off of one audience. Whether or not that just means Greg's audience is amazing and super durable, or the assumption that it's pressing in my mind is like, well, you don't actually need that big of an audience or that massive of a top of funnel to actually get this going. Talk about that, because it's blowing my mind how, and maybe it's, I don't know the underneath the surface, right? It could just be that like you guys hit a couple winners that are just spitting a ton of cash, and like the rest of these are just like smaller side bets that it's, you're growing, but like they're immaterial today. But talk about that, because that might shatter people like me's assumption that we need these huge top of funnel audiences before we can build anything cash flowing.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of a myth or misconception. We try to use Greg as like a launch pad, and it's always like very natural when he launches something. But then we try to distance as much as possible. And obviously he supports it, retweeting, commenting, you know, saying he's an investor in the stuff. But like Boring Marketing has like 35,000 followers on Twitter, and now has its own brand and its own Twitter following and its own newsletter that has like over 10,000 subscribers. And we just did a workshop last week and like had 900 people come to it, all around trying to be a boring marketer. So it's interesting to use like the creator-led brand stuff to do the launch pad, but it can't be like your jet fuel to get out of the stratosphere. I love the example of Cars and Bids from like Doug DeMiro. You know, he had that big like YouTube channel where he was reviewing cars and breaking things down. He always liked Bring a Trailer, but he's like, I could start a competitive Bring a Trailer. I think he supported like the first 100 sales on the marketplace, but he had a creative partner and a technical partner on the side. And then they just sold a big piece of that a couple of years ago to the Chiernan Group.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I mean, obviously he was a co-founder in it, but like, it's not like, hey, we're back with Doug and it's Cars and Bids again, you know? It's like completely,
it's separate from him now.
Yeah, exactly.
And I so like that. I like that. The launching. That's a really good frame.
Yeah. Shout out Elon.
So yeah. Shout out Elon. Starship made it. So to take this opportunity selfishly, then this is like going to put you on the spot a little, but if you're analyzing me and like my creator stuff from the outside. And you've already been a part of like building a successful holdco that's cash flowing. And my goal is to build a holdco that's cash flowing. What do you think, like, and we can live workshop this. I think it probably would be valuable for people to just like hear the back and forth, but what do you think I should be doing that I'm not doing from a, well, I'll just leave it broad. What do you think I should be doing that I'm not doing to kind of go down that path?
Yeah. So you've got your content bucket right now, and there's just millions of views pouring in every week, but you don't have a bottom to your bucket. Really?
Exactly.
Other than your newsletter, right? Like blueprints, yeah, really like kind of where you're funneling stuff.
Yeah.
But even like you're building up all of this trust, which is dope, but also someone who found you like 6 months ago might've been ready to buy something from you then and is now on to the next thing. So I think if I was like coaching you, I think you're just dramatically under monetized and like over focused on like building this like big trustworthy thing. Like you got to do what's true to you. But I think there's like a couple of things that you could be providing a lot of value to some of those eyeballs in unique ways that are like true to you that get the flywheel started. Cause like you just got to pick one thing to really like get it started and just be like, all right, this is my one thing. Let's do it and lock in, because otherwise you're constantly like thinking about what could be that one thing to start.
As a consumer of my content and like content like mine, what do you think the highest leverage thing that I could offer that you would be excited to pay for would look like?
I think like constructions of shorts and storytelling. Like even watching your really old videos, like it's night and day where you've been able to come. Like your first ones are, it's still good. Like it's still like 10 times better than what I can do. Like I've tried to do short form and I'm just absolutely trash at it. You've seen it. I've sent it to you. And it's like, it's tough. So I think like understanding like even like how to tell a story, how to write a script for short form could be really interesting. Like take your landing page and make a short form about it. Like creating these like frictionless moments of where people could start building short form, because I think there's a huge, and I feel this personally, it's like there's a huge barrier of like, what should I record? What's the script? What, like, how am I going to do this thing for 2 hours and it's going to get 100 views?
So this is something I wanted to talk to you about, because I think like one of the biggest points of friction in what do I create for me is that the majority of the people I'm talking to are other creators who we're trying to anticipate what other people want. But one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is because you can put on the lens of like a consumer of the content and like where you're also an aspiring creator with Do Within. You're trying to like create stuff as well. So it's like my thinking is, and tell me what you think of this. My whole plan is build a huge top of funnel with my short form being AI, tech news, cult brand, top of funnel viral stories, me breaking them down in like my signature way. That builds credibility that I know what I'm doing with content. Then everything else, this podcast, my newsletter, my YouTube channel is all about designed to get people who are trying to up level in content, creators, entrepreneurs, small business owners, marketers. And I'm using the short form as like the canvas. So it's not just me teaching painting. It's like, yo, go look at my paintings. You can see they work, or you can see they're good. Let me teach you how. And then my thinking was, okay, the best way to be able to create like a cult is through some sort of a community. And I wanted to funnel people from the email, from the YouTube, from the podcast into a community, whether that's paid. And we've talked about this before, whether that's paid or free. And then once they're in the community, I basically can specifically build stuff for them. So it could be courses, like you're saying, to up level them. It could be, you know, physical products, whatever. But I think the most valuable thing, which I was underrating before, is it gives me a targeted niche that's already invested in the thing I'm talking about and me to basically understand what are your biggest pain points. So every week I can be like, hey, you're trying to be a creator and you're trying to bridge this gap. What is holding you back? Maybe to solve that pain point, it's a course. But maybe not. It could just be a tool. And I think the best way to tease out what to build is to actually harness the group of people you're trying to build for. Most people don't get the opportunity to harness that group because they're trying to build in a vacuum. But because I have this like huge audience, I could basically take 500,000 people, take a 10th of that, take 50,000, channel them into a community, and then use those 50,000 to guide my product roadmap for the next 10 years. That's what that's kind of where my thinking has evolved. Because before I was like, let me just build what I think is cool and people will come. And I actually just think that's a terrible approach. What do you think about that?
Couldn't agree more. We use this model called ACP, audience, community, product. You got audience, you need community, and then you build products for that community that they are basically begging for. That you will have like x-ray vision on what to build because they'll be like talking about it inside of the community. So I think like, how can you provide value along the way? I do think you should monetize your community because there's a lot of value there that could be tied to ROI. And I think this like everything's free type thing, I don't like really jive with it that much because like you gotta live and you gotta invest and you want to build these like worlds and like worlds cost money. Shout out to the government.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you, so on that point, what do you think about the idea of like, if I made the community free and I made one short form video about it, I could probably drive 5,000 people into it right now. But if I charged $20 a month, I'm probably only going to get 100 to 200 people that pay for it. Now, like I get the 100 times $20 a month is $2,000. And that's significant that I can use to invest. But is that revenue more beneficial than the feedback from 25x the size in terms of what to build? How do you guys think about that?
Yeah, it really just depends on like if you can float it for free and that's like the core goal is just like mine the community and get as many people in there as possible. I don't think more is necessarily better though. You really want like people that are like heavily invested in this stuff, either from a time perspective or a capital perspective, to be the ones inputting it. You don't just want volume of like a bunch of birds chirping at you, telling you what you should build.
Yeah.
That's so true, like maybe you start with a product and be like, as the part of this product, you get access to this community. So it's like, if you're trying to level up, here's a script guide. It's $50 or something. Like, dude, you'll level up, or like the Cut 30 guides, like what Orin's done. I think there's massive value there. It's like a cohort based thing. Like Hans, Laurie, the design guy, you may follow him on Instagram.
Yeah.
He actually lives in Nashville. So we became friends before he blew up. But like, he was like, we met in like September. He started in October and now he has like 270,000 followers doing design stuff. And like, so there's a lot of value there. And like, yeah, he paid $300 for that cohort course. Okay. But like, dude, he made that back like overnight through consulting. Yeah. He charged like $450 an hour now.
Yeah, I have some interesting, so I think I'm going to go paid with it, specifically on that last point that you said, which was when you go free, you're just increasing the amount of noise that you're getting in the feedback. If someone's willing to pay, that means they're serious. I was always looking at the payment as like a defensive lens of like, well, I have to provide 10x more value than what they're paying. So if I'm charging them $20 a month, I need to provide $200 of value a month. I think I should just invert my thinking. And the reason I want to have this conversation live is because people can really benefit from these types of conversations because they never happen in public. My thinking is invert that and instead go on offense and be like, basically by someone opting in, it narrows the pool of focus for me to take seriously on what to build. And if you're willing to pay, that means you're actually a target customer of what I'm going to make later, which means I can trust your feedback more. And so it's up to me to be like, okay, I still want to deliver 10x value, but putting the price barrier actually makes it easier for me to find signal, which is what I want all along. So even if the group is smaller, because I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. A couple of the things I was thinking about offering, I'm going to do a live creative brainstorm. So for me, like my favorite thing is reacting to stuff real time. I used to freestyle rap. Like I love like having no prep coming in and just like the sport of like figuring it out on the fly. And so I've been consulting with brands where I get on the call, I have no idea what they're going to say. They're like, hey, we need X, Y, and Z with content. What's your take? How to do it? So I'm just going to do that at scale. Like everyone in the community, we'll do some random number generator and whoever gets it will get to come on stage and we'll just do a live consulting call in front of everyone else or like record it so people can watch. So that's one thing. What do you think? What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's hard. That's hard. I like that. Yeah. Dope. I'm big into like scalable consulting. Like, hey, watch me consult.
Yeah.
Like I think Gary Vee did this a while ago too, where he's like, yo, you can come do a power hour, 4 people come, pay like $2,000, but I'm filming the whole thing.
Yeah.
So like, you're signing up for that, you know? I know he's doing it at like a different level, but like, yo, new landing page, new brand design. You know, like if I was paying $20 a month and had those Do Within hats designed, like, yeah, I would try to get on a number generator, like have 200 people in the chat roast my design or like want to pre-order it. Yeah. That'd be fire.
The other thing, so another thing holding me back about the paid community or even any community is I was thinking if I'm going to spend my time making a piece of content, I don't want to then cut out the legs of 90% of the reach by only posting it in a free or in a paid community where it has no like virality versus when I could post on YouTube. But instead, I think, again, like to invert the thinking, the beauty of a platform like School, and I want to get into School because you're like one of the experts on School and there's a wave happening and I want you to talk about it. The benefit of something like School is I can create a piece of content for YouTube, put it on YouTube, post it in School to drive the email notification to tell all the people in the community that it got posted on YouTube. They'll go to YouTube and watch it, but then I can do something exclusive in the community with that learning for only them. And it's like, instead of just making that video for the School community and basically capping it at 200 views or whatever, I can kind of double dip. And I think the ability to double dip while adding value to everyone is extremely powerful, especially giving that amplification to YouTube. So that's another like little lesson. One other idea, and then I want to go to the School thing. So what I was thinking is like, everyone in this community is going to want to make content. And the reason why they're going to want to make content is because they're either going to want to drive more sales for their own product, or they're going to want to kind of do what I'm doing, which is partner with brands. So once you create a community, a paid community, which is like a filtered list of serious creators, I could then just go to the brands I'm already going to and almost have a marketplace there where I'm providing partnership opportunities or like shortcut partnership opportunities to the creators. So if you're paying $20 a month, which is $240 a year, and you land one brand deal in 4 years that's more than $1,000, you just ROI'd the whole thing back. And so I think when you start to stack those, and all this is the reason I'm sharing this is because it all kind of came to me in the last few days as I was really thinking about like how to stack value. All of that stacked on top of each other is so worth it. Like you would pay so much for that access if you knew that it was like a serious thing. So I don't know if you have any reactions to any of that.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about memberships is like with time and value, you can layer products on that increase the value exponentially over time. You know, like how we're running Community Empire at Late Checkout right now. It's like started at $99 a month. It's up to $149, but now we've layered on like 6 months worth of workshops, more trainings, more templates, $50,000 in tool savings that weren't there that we like accrued. You get access to the holding company and the different services at a discount as well. So we're like just layering value on, and like the longer that time goes, I'm not saying the price will increase exponentially, but that's the beautiful thing about communities and memberships. Like I'm honestly reframing how I think about the word community is like it's a membership going forward. So I think community is going to get beat up again now that Alex Hormozi is in the building. So
yeah, I'm super bullish on the idea of digital member clubs. I think like the whole world runs on this club model, like the country club model. I think that's why NFTs, as scammy as the medium became, the reason why I thought it was sick is because Bored Ape basically created a new form of member club that anybody could get into, and you could monetize your way out as well if you didn't want to be in it anymore. So I think I like what you said, these kind of paid communities or even free communities, but especially these paid communities on School are really digital member clubs that you can buy your way into. And they're like utility based, value specific around a certain topic. So let's get into School, because if you're listening to this, if you've never heard of School, it's SKOOL. And it's basically emerged as the new platform for hosting these paid communities, more or less, or free communities. But there's specific differences between School and some of the other platforms. So you may think of Slack, Discord, or even things like Circle. Slack and Discord are, in my opinion, on the spectrum of like high frequency communication, real-time messaging. You can reach anyone at any time, but like the velocity of the messages are almost hard to keep up with. They're not really built for like search or archiving information. They're more built for I can get in touch with a certain amount of people very quickly. And then you've got like Circle and School on the other side, which do not have a live chat. Or I don't know, Circle may have a live chat. School doesn't have a live chat. And these are built more like channel specific, where you've got almost like a forum where you've got these feeds of information that are easily searchable. And it's just like a much slower, deliberate community platform. So I'd love for you to talk through like as you guys have run Community Empire, which is probably the best way to learn how to use school, we'll say, talk through school and why you think it's such an undervalued platform.
It's just getting started, really. And I think the design intent behind it is what makes it really interesting. Like, there is no live chat, and that's intentional. From my understanding, like talking with Sam Ovens and the team, it's like they get that request like all the time. And there's like even real estate in school that like it would fit perfectly. But I think they want it to be more of like a living archive, courses, membership. It's just really out of the box for $99 a month. You can literally up and running and put a buy button on the internet in 1 hour, which is nuts. Like, you've got the feed, which is like the community tab. You've got the calendar where you can host events. You've got the classroom where you can host courses. You've got the about page, which becomes your landing page and accepts payment. That's cheaper than Stripe. Like, you used to have to set all that stuff up on like all these different tools and just increase friction and connect Zaps to it. But no, you can like put a buy button on the internet. And I would love to see like how fast I could go from like 0 to 1 on school. It'd probably be like 20 minutes at this point.
Yeah. And they have a ton of integrations too. Like, I could see school having an app marketplace the same way. Like, you know, all these people talk about, oh, if you can just build an app for the platform marketplace, like Shopify apps or Google Chrome extensions. I feel like school will also, or they may already have, I don't know if it's open to third party apps, but like they will have that soon. So this, I could see this becoming like the backbone or like the spine for paid communities moving forward.
Yeah, I could definitely see it. They're doing things in a very intentional way that I respect, and it's lagging behind like the feature requests. Like, the feature requests are flying at them like at breakneck speed, and I think they're moving as fast as possible. But you can definitely see a world where that comes into the API access and build apps and really like make it modular. I think that would be sick. Like, if I wanted to download the live chat plugin, it could be like a widget on the side. And you kind of make it your own. So I think school, it's just really interesting as a membership platform, as like the next tier from like a newsletter, whether it's free or paid. I view like these membership communities almost like, I use this analogy. It's like you got your nation that's like social, right? It's like the United States. Then you got your state, which is like your newsletter. Then you got your city, which is like these communities. And then you've got these the products that you sell, and that's like your neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you just like break that down, right? And like, but it's like, all right, I live in the United States. All right, I follow you on social. And it just like, you slowly are just moving people down into like a more intentional bucket. Sure, money comes with that too. But like you said before, the noise and the filter, like you have no lack of noise with your audience, right?
Yeah, that's like, right now I have a ton of noise. I have so much noise that I don't know what to build, where to go, who to make stuff for. Like, I ran a poll of like, which of these content formats do people like? And it was like 60% this, 35%. Like, it was hard to even tease out what people wanted. And I think Oren said this yesterday. He was like, once you start going on a channel on social around a certain content format and people follow you, and it hits and people follow you for it, they don't really want other things. Like, they want to invest in you, but they don't want other formats. They like the hero stuff. And so for me, as someone over the past few months, I've experimented with trying to shift from A to like A plus B plus C plus D. All my views went down. A went down, B went down, because people don't want that. So he's like, you should launch other channels to do that. And I think what a community does is it gives you an opportunity to narrow into the people who would like A plus B plus C plus D because they're so focused on that one topic. So I really like that. There's something you said 100%. Like 5 minutes ago that I think is a brilliant insight, like a gem that I had never thought of before. You basically said the benefit of a paid community in something like school is that over time, as you're getting paid by the initial members, you're increasing the amount of repository information and value that's in the vault so that it basically is just, you could just keep increasing the price of the community over time, not because the value of the network is growing with size, but because the value of the information bank is growing, and you're basically getting paid to build that bank over time. And so in theory, the price should never be lower. It will always just slow. You could increase it forever. The people who join are grandfathered in because you've got more value benefits accrued. I never really thought about it like that, which that makes a ton of sense. Like if you think about it that way, everyone should have this community structure, whether it's paid or free, so that they can build this mind vault of all of their best stuff. And then over time, you can kind of increase the price. That was a gem.
Beauty. Thanks for replaying it. Yeah, strongly believe that for sure. And I also have a take that I think we're going to see a lot more paywalled or private content. And I think the free content will become a lead magnet for the paid content and back and forth. So it's like, we may do this pod and it's like, yo, if you want the Q&A, like we're going to end it right now. But if you want it, come to weekends. We'll be jamming in there live. You know, we're like, this is like the pregame. And then like the real party is like, all right, if you want to get invited to dinner after, like we're actually going to go to hang out on weekends.
I love that.
And like, that's where like the real sauce happens. I think we just have too much free content right now. I'm like, I just like, I'm robbing people that I follow, you know, like I just know it, like, but it's going to shift and it's going to be wild when it shifts.
Well, the psychology for me as the creator is like, I'm so afraid of being branded as the scammer, money grabber guy, where like it is an iceberg and everything below the surface is paid and I'm not giving enough value. And I think what happens to your point is over time, I just inverted the iceberg so much that I have nothing below the water and I'm just dying with everything above, spending 40 hours a week making free content and nothing's come, like no values being extracted back to me. So I agree. That's a huge problem. And a lot of it is this perception psychology issue that I'm afraid of getting branded the course guy or whatever. It also depends on the niche. So I've recently shifted where I'm like, hey, if what I'm optimizing for is high trust, but like to work with brands that can pay the most, I need to go for big tech brands that have 95% margins. And these are software AI companies. And if that's who I'm going for, then so be it. Like that's the type of content I'm making. So it's really easy to create a paid community around that because there's so much margin that people are willing to pay. If I went to all of these AI companies and said, hey, I think I'm top 1%, top 0.01% in content, have your whole marketing team pay to join this community, they would, because they have so much money and they're trying to up level in that area, versus if I'm selling to a different sector where the margins are, like if I was selling to e-com owners and the margins are already so low, it becomes a much harder sell. So I think it depends what sector you're going for. But if the sector you're going for is high margin, then it just makes so much more sense to put stuff behind a paywall. I was very hesitant of that though for a while.
Yeah, I think it's an insecurity thing more than anything, is like the perception, especially when you're first getting started. I see a lot of this in like the community design space. People are like, and there's weekly calls and there's one-on-ones and there's this and there's that. And then it hits. And they're like, what? I can't even deliver on that. And like, actually, no one even cares about that stuff. But like, you just like make it worth the price and you level it up, level it up, level it up. And it never stops.
Yeah.
And you're like, now everyone's losing because you're burnt out. The members don't even give a rip about it. But you tried to make it worth the money.
So that was something I was going to ask you, is as the steward of communities on school through Community Empire, what are the
generous?
Yeah, we give out big titles here. As the steward, as the king, as the community king, what are the mistakes that people are making when they're setting them up? Because for anyone from the outside listening, and honestly me as well, you look at late checkout and you're like, okay, their plan makes a lot of sense. They pick an area, build a community, build a team around that, and then add the newsletter, add the content, add the product, grow it. And you guys have little pods of 5 to 10 people or whatever it is, but you also have all these services that can support it. I'm alone. I'm on my own. So to be able to make promises, but then over deliver on the promises without getting burnt out and still keep the top of funnel, I'm not gonna be able to do everything initially. And so I'm trying to figure out what's the 80-20. where do you think people go wrong when they're making these communities to start out that causes either high churn or unhappy members?
I think over engineering the community to start is probably the biggest thing. Is like, just put it out there. You don't need to make all these like big lofty promises about what it is. Like, have one outcome. All right, your outcome is you're gonna level up your content, or you're gonna get a brand deal within 90 days of being in here. You know, like some metric of whatever the key outcome is, and just leave it at that. And like, this is what we do here. Here's like some of the rituals. Here's the people that you can meet in there. But like, the best communities become self-sustaining probably in like 90 days. Like, obviously someone will always be like stoking the fire and stuff, but there's so much downtime and exhaust that you could probably put into a community that you put like, I mean, we could be doing this call in that community. You know, we talk more than just here. Like, we text, like we were texting last night. Like, we could just do that in the community, you know? So there's like a bunch of like overlap things. And I've called this like the frictionless creator system, or like becoming a frictionless creator. And I think like Zach Pograb, your boy, is that even how you say his name?
Obsession Pograb, guy. I think.
Pograb. But he had this tweet or quote or something. It was like, when the story is the marketing, you just have to live your life. And I think that is what you need to do with your community. It's like, your life can be the community.
Yeah.
And like, just live your life inside of the community, and like, you'll be gravy.
I think that is what makes it tough when you're a creator, is if there's any lens or any veil or any friction between what you actually do and then what you're trying to signal online, everything becomes like where do I put this? Like, do I tweet it? Do I keep it to myself? Do I put it in Instagram story? Do I make a video? Do I put it in the community? But to Zach's point, when you get rid of all that friction and you're just like, okay, the community is my conduit for everything. This is where I am me. Like, this is where I am myself. So every thought I have that's high value, I just put in there, or any thought of any value, I just put in there. And the people that are paying to be there have self-selected in because they want more of you. And then you just run it that way. And then I think you can use the lens of like what will work by posting outside, but inside you fill it with content. That's the thing, is I've always labeled myself as like not a great community manager, mostly because I don't want to have to keep coming in to stoke the fire, to keep it warm. But that's why I like school, because school is not designed for it's not designed as Robin Hood. It's designed as Charles Schwab. Like, all you need to do is go in there once a week, one couple times a week, read the digest. If you get called out in a conversation that like you made a post about, you'll get an email notification that will bring you back in. That's like, we have enough real-time messaging devices between all the DMs on social, text message, Slack. Nobody needs another thing to check every day. And I think school, you talk to them, this is probably why they designed it this way, is like, I think people's perception when they're not checking something all day long, if that's the expectation, is that they're not getting the value from it. And then there's this like negative psychology cycle. But with school, it's like, yo, there's a wealth of information here. And when you need something, you can come search for it. And if you want to check it weekly, you can, but you don't have to. That's like a much healthier relationship, I think.
Yeah. Put your greatest hits inside of there, you know, put the best of blueprint in there. It's not every blueprint, but it's like the ones that you got 20 plus replies to or whatever, with the best questions, like, that, like, there's a value in the curation. So I don't have to go back through like 38 things. And if you're like rebringing it back to my attention, there's probably value in there and I'm paying to be there. And like, going back to the first question, he's like, how do you find your number two or producer? It's like, dude, they'll probably be in there.
Yeah. They'll be
like,
in there.
They'll probably rise to the top, right? Like, they'll be like, dude, dang, this guy's not even getting paid, but he's like, he is my community manager. Like, Visualize Value has a couple of those guys. That are just killer. We found Patrick for Community Empire from our other community. And he's just an incredible community lead. And so I think there's just a bunch of wins. I think you gotta get it going. That's my challenge for you.
I'm gonna launch it next week for sure. And just let it go where it is. One thing you said earlier I wanted to circle back to is on the main late checkout agency. You guys renamed it LCA, nice sexy name, feels very WME-esque, which I love. So you guys are basically playing on the edges with the biggest companies, who I would say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I like to just make swing assumptions without any data, but effectively startups are cutting edge, big companies lag the cutting edge, but the innovation arms at the big companies are trying to close that gap, right? They're the most forward thinkers in the big companies, but they might still be a couple years behind like the most cutting edge startups. Without divulging NDA protected information, what are like the themes that are interesting to you when you hear about these projects that are happening at these big companies? What stands out to you as interesting that you would cover? We can dive into some of these.
So our whole process is around this voice of community methodology. And it's not just building communities, but it's injecting communities inside of these products to make them feel more alive, make them feel more connected, and have these larger companies or even startups view their customers and potential customers as a community. And so the insight there is like, if you're listening to customer sentiment and listening to the voice of the community, understanding who your customer actually is, and mining the internet using AI and data insights that we have in our research team, you can basically be told what to build. And that puts you 18 to 24 months ahead of even what people are asking for. So we look at it as this like overlap between the market and trend, your current products, and then what your community is saying. And at that intersection is the three or four ideas that have the highest likelihood of success. Now, which one do you want to do? You know, like, should Liquid Death, this is not a client at all, but they could be. Shout out Liquid Death. Do they want to launch a Celsius competitor? Should they launch a Celsius competitor?
Wait, so use that as an example. So like, you guys go into Liquid Death. How are you harnessing their community to tease out that idea? Like, me and you could come up with like, should they launch Celsius, but to validate right. That the community wants it, how are you guys actually going about activating the community or measuring it or whatever?
Yeah. So through a series of tools that we've built, a lot of it is mining Reddit and aggregating stuff across socials and really bringing those things to the forefront of what their customers are saying, what the questions are asking. We use a lot of free tools too, like vidIQ, for example, to like mine what people are asking in YouTube videos. So that's like part of the community element of it. And then like some deeper research stuff that's more like hand-to-hand combat.
So these are like external, like about the company, but these are external signals that you're mining, and then you're going to Liquid Death and you're saying, hey, these are all the things that your community is actually saying from what we found because of the proprietary tools and the methods we have. Now, which one of these three is interesting to you? And like, we're also going to build and design it more or less. That's how it goes.
Yep, exactly. Really, companies ask us like a really, really big question. Like Liquid Death, for using that example, it's like they would ask like, how do we get into the fitness energy game?
Yeah. And that happens like, first. Okay. Like they come to Greg or Theo or like an account rep you guys have, and they're like, these are the questions we have. And then you guys just do the research on spec to like mine those ideas. And that's where the relationship starts.
That's usually where the relationship starts. Yeah. So we're like very value first, hand to hand combat on the relational side of things. Cause like we're trying to live the way we talk and work as well. So like we reach out and just like, do you want to jam on this? Like, what are some big questions that you guys have? That's how a lot of our sales conversations start, honestly. It's just like, I mean, like I'll rip random messages on LinkedIn to like the innovation manager at Disney. Just be like, yo, Greg's going to be in LA. Like, if you want to come to this event, come through. But she shows up. Like, it's the barrier is like really, really low to get in front of these people. Like, they get amped when you like talk their talk and like make them look good inside their business. Like, yeah, they'll jam.
That goes back to what I was saying before is like, if you have no presence online and you reach out to someone with a bunch of followers, they'll probably respond. If it's the reverse, they're for sure like someone with like low presence online. If someone like Greg or you reaches out to them, they're like, yo, this is sick. Like I'll definitely come and have a conversation for free about what my problems are.
Yeah. It's like, oh my gosh, I would love that. And like, we even want to go a step further and start like an innovation podcast and like a media arm that like highlights some of these dope people that never get interviewed. Or like when they do, it's like the stuffiest New York Times or like Vogue or Forbes interview. It's like, oh wait, you like, here's six podcast clips.
Yeah, that would, like, crush.
Boom.
So that, so Square, how all that ties together. So basically, LCA works with these huge companies, big questions, does the research on spec, gets brought into these big companies with whatever the research, you know, nets out. And then the big company's like, oh, wow, ideas one and three, those are amazing. We have no action on that. You're like, surprise, we can do it. You guys do it for them. Either build the whole thing or, like, I'm sure some design sprint and they decide to go, no go. But then you have these other businesses, I would say, are smaller, right? They're really guided. Some of them, I guess, could be guided towards the Fortune 500, but it feels like they're positioned towards down the stack in terms of size. Dispatch, I know you guys are rebranding it. We'll see where that nets out. But, like, Boring Marketer, I imagine that's for companies that need to take advantage of SEO in an efficient way that don't have huge teams and resources on it. And you probably need a robot similar as, like, people who want to learn about AI. It's like, how does all this tie together in the Constellation frame, other than, for now, it may not just connect and LCA just prints cash and funds everything. Like, what's the thinking there?
All of them are profitable. But LCA, like, just based on the LTV, is the most profitable.
Yeah.
So. I mean, that's what it is. And then Boring Marketing is quickly approaching, growing like a weed for sure, because it's just, like, a really nice offer. And they definitely play in the SMB, like, mid-sized business space. But they do have a couple larger enterprise clients as well. But how does that tie all in together? Like, a lot of times, like, LCA will get, like, a pitch and really it's a downsell to Dispatch. Like, they need more marketing design support than they need, like, product innovation. And so, like, those three kind of play at a very similar level. You probably need a robot, Dispatch and Boring Marketing, throw each other deals a lot.
Yeah.
But also, like, an agency client came from, you probably need a robot. You probably need a robot as, like, the surface, and then it just, like, it goes up to the quote unquote big leagues.
So let's talk about Boring Marketing, because Greg always says, he's like, this thing is just printing cash. He, like, every time I listen to him, he's like,
yeah,
this thing shocked us. We couldn't believe it. It's just print. So what about this is a gold mine? Is it the, well, I guess I'll leave it open, but, like, talk through in detail what that product or, like, what that service does and why the people that buy it, it's so much better than the alternative.
Yeah, it's a really interesting offer. First off, it's AI assisted SEO. How to generate free leads or, like, free traffic to your company.
And what's the offer?
It's just really interesting. Like, people are just like, what is that? Like, I want that. Like, I want free leads for sure.
Yeah.
So the offer starts with, like, an audit, and you basically get a 12-month roadmap on all the things that you could be doing, all the keyword targeting, all the research. You can see it on boringmarketing.com, but that's the audit. And every client starts with an audit, and then basically have that 12-month plan. Then you can either go do it yourself, or you can work with the Boring Marketer content team that has a software tool that we built internally that uses it to basically provide the service. So everything is, like, all these people are talking about productized service. It's like, productized service never should have been an outbound marketing strategy. It was always, like, an internal goal to increase profit. Like, but somehow it became like, oh, here's 5,000, like, here be my productized service. And so we're basically doing a service as a software instead of software as a service.
Yeah. So this is very interesting. This is another, like, gem nugget, which is I guess you can talk about this, like, the economics from the reason I like talking about these things is because as a creator, or I hate looking at myself as a creator, but, like, as a general purpose entrepreneur that makes content, there are these predefined paths for monetization that you look up at the people that you think you want to be like, and they either took path A, path B, path C. Path A is brand deals, path B is courses, path C is whatever. But the reality is, at one point there was no path A, path B, path C. They just made that up, and then people made YouTube videos on it because they made a ton of money, and that became the, like, framework. But actually, a lot of the juice is in D, E, F, and G, which a couple people are doing, but nobody talks about. And so this is another one of those gems where it's like the normal conventional path is build an Ahrefs clone, software as a service, or SaaS, that has AI built into it, or like AI in the marketing, but it's just SaaS and you subscribe to it for $49 a month and et cetera. That's the like traditional path. This is really interesting because it's inverting that, which most people don't do, which is, hey, we have Ahrefs, but you can't buy it. The only people that can use it is us. And you have to buy services in a pack of $5,000 a month or $10,000 a month or whatever. And we're just going to use, like, the audit is a really interesting way to get leads. Like, it's a very savvy way because I'm sure the audit never comes back clean, right? It's like, there's always something to be improved because most people don't do SEO. But the service is the lead. Like, that's where you make all the money from, and that's what people are buying. That's a different model than what most people talk about, because when you think service, you think high bandwidth thing to deliver, lower margins, more stress versus software. So yeah, I mean, I love the way you frame that out, and I like finding these alternative paths, because I'm sure like you could use, like, what's an example, if you've thought about this, that you could use Boring Marketing's framework to apply to other industries? I'm sure you guys have kicked this around, right? Because you see Boring Marketing working so well.
Yeah, totally. Can't disclose. Got to keep the sauce for now.
But you are thinking that frame, right? You're thinking that way, right? Which is just like build a tool internally and sell a service that solves a problem, more or less.
Yeah, so around the ACP framework again too. Like build this audience out and put them in a community, and then the product started as a service. I think services are the best way to learn about people's problems. Like,
yeah, because you're talking
to them. You're talking to them, you're doing the thing for them, you're ingrained in it. So like, what better way to build a tool than providing a service? And I think a lot of people like just look at SaaS and it's like the most scalable business model of all time, 99% margin. But like, it's really, really hard on a lot of other levels to scaling the business. You people forget about churn. You know, like leaky bucket and churn is an absolute disaster. Wouldn't you rather like provide strategic partnership and provide like just a bang up service that people never want to quit you because you've created so much ROI?
Yeah. I mean, the other thing too is like SaaS is not really a great wedge into other things because you're, like you said, you're not talking to the people. But if you're doing a service and you're talking to the customer and they're like, oh yeah, I have this problem, but I also have this other problem. And that's where Dispatch and these other services come in. You upsell them so much easier. The other thing I was thinking too, I want to get your thoughts on, is as AI matriculates everywhere, and it will, like people can say it won't, but it will in like 1 to 2 years, SaaS becomes less attractive as AI, as anyone can build any tool at any time using the existing tools as the literal code base skeleton. Like you can just feed Ahrefs into an AI and say, build me something like this that can do X. And it will be eventually, that'll be able to be built. So there's not really a moat around SaaS unless you have proprietary data, but there is a moat around service. Like service is as good as the service practitioners. And if I actually think this might be an unlock into how the model will shift, where everybody's going to use AI to create all these proprietary tools internally, and they don't actually sell the tool. They just sell the service wrapper using the tool, and whoever can make the best tools internally with AI wins. And that's a complete shift from how most people, that's a shift from how I was thinking about it. So yeah, I'm fascinated to hear what these other sectors are that you guys are working on. We'll have to circle back in a few more months.
For sure. Be watching. Yeah, it's an interesting paradigm for sure. With AI creeping into everything, it'll obviously get better. I don't know. I go back and forth on AI.
Yeah. Give me your take. Cause you probably need a robot. So you've been deep on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the tools are just so nascent right now. Like a lot of them are just a pain to work with. Like,
yeah,
am I really going to like type into this chat box so I can like get this answer back? Like I use it to review my work sometimes, or like find spelling errors, or like come up with stuff. But I think it's really powerful. The hype is like, we're not going to see the real, real sauce for like probably like 9 to 18 more months. But yeah, I know that it's going to be really powerful. I'm excited about like the agent piece of it. like, I mean, I would love this to-do list to like start to get done. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I don't know why everyone's freaking out about their like to-do list going away, because I never finish mine. So,
yeah.
And just like, I would love for AI to do more computer things and humans to do more human things.
Yeah. So. I mean, for transparency, I don't really use AI for anything. I have ChatGPT Pro. I want to subscribe to Perplexity Pro because I think it's why I've tried it before, but I actually think people are undervaluing the rigidity of a habit, and that habit being going to Google to find your answers. I think people are undervaluing that. However, you see little glimpses like Sora with the video, like when that can be as good as it should be 6 to 12 months from now, that will be a part of the workflow. So I agree. It's like, we're in this really, really interesting in-between time. Most people are dismissing AI who aren't close to it. The people who are close to it are like, this is coming, but I can't really use it today. And then there are some people that are using it that are like stitching together workflows. But I'd argue a lot of those are overcomplicating simple things anyway. So it's an interesting time. I've written a lot about what I think happens when that moment comes for different industries, and like what happens as a creator. Like, if there's 1,000 new pieces of content posted a day at this quality level, does that mean there are now 1 million new pieces a day, or there's 1 million below and 1,000 are that much more important? Or is there a badge that, you know, the government / the social platforms are basically mutinied into adding that's human versus AI? And it's basically the same as like you buy organic versus non-organic at the grocery store, and people just filter out all the AI stuff and they only want to watch human stuff. Like, there's a lot of ways that it could end up going, but I find it very interesting, that idea of using AI to build internal tools and then sell services outside. I love that.
Yeah. Human stuff. For sure. What's your take on authenticity, like in the power of and the future of?
Yeah. Like as a creator making content.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, the party line, like the generic thing is like authenticity is the only thing that matters. And I think that's true for two reasons. One, as a human, like we've now been, especially our age, we've been trained over the last 15 years to watch stuff online. And so like your tuner in your brain for what's real and what's fake is so dialed that if someone's just spewing nonsense, unless it's edited unbelievably or like they're a sociopath, you really can tell if it's authentic or not. And I tend to gravitate away from stuff that I think is fake. Like when people are flexing and I know they should, and I know it's not real, I'm like, this is fake. And I just scroll away. Versus I love when people are being super vulnerable and raw, and like there is no filter between them. So one reason why I think it's so important is just because your stuff will do worse over time, because the consumer of content is just more and more tuned to what authenticity is. The second reason is it's just really hard to put up a front for that long as the maker. Like, trying to act like a kid, like there's a reason why there's only a few method actors that are that good, because method acting is like Heath Ledger method acted and then he ended up killing himself, sadly. But like, you can't play another character for a long time. You just can't. Like, it's really tough. You always revert back to your natural drift. And so the reason authenticity is so powerful for the maker is because there is no difference between you on and you off. And that means you can make stuff forever. So I'm very bullish on authenticity. I'm very bullish on transparency as well, potentially to my detriment. I share like all my metrics and income, and eventually I think I'm going to be negotiating against myself by doing that. But I just think like when I sat here with no traction and I was looking up at everyone and I was like, what did they do? You really can't find what they did in the beginning. You can always find what they did 4 or 5 years in, and you can always find the revisionist history, but you never get the genius, the like Kanye genius documentary. You never get that footage because so many people don't do it. So I think being authentic about like and transparent about your experience is like super valuable. Hopefully people think that.
Totally. Yeah. I'm excited about it too. I feel very similarly. It would be nice to just be like, all right, cool, I'm just going to be myself and like win by doing that, right?
Yeah.
Like, that
sounds it just
fun.
Takes longer, right? Because you have to find, you can't be what others want. You have to be yourself and have others that like that eventually find you. It just takes longer for them to find you. All right, before I let you go, Do Within's sick. I honestly think Do Within has a lot of potential legs. And as a critical observer from the outside, I feel like it doesn't get the amount of mind share from you as it, I wish it did, because I feel like it could be much bigger. What are the plans with Do Within, and what do you wish you could do more of with it?
I love it. Yeah, I wish I got more mind share too. Do Within is like my brand filter of where I'm forcing my ideas through. And it really started like that. I had a million ideas of like what I should call like my personal brand or whatever. It was like so many bad ones. And I was like, all right, what is this actually going to be? And I kept saying Do Within. Like, I just want to do cool things with cool people, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to make it Do Within and just like force my ideas. Like, this is going to be a channel I can just push my ideas through. So what I want it to be is just like that in and of itself. It's like a place where, I mean, it's resonating a lot, like more than anything I've ever done before. Like, it's finding resonance. So it's dope to see you feel that as well. What do you wish it would be? Like, what do you wish to see more of?
Yeah, basically, I think it could be a bunch of things. I think it could be a lifestyle brand that is, you know, the occasional hat and hoodie and posters and stuff. I think it could be a course community thing where you like Do Within is like you pick verticals and you like teach people how to do them with other people. I don't know what I want it to be. I do like your visualized value. You're kind of like the two visualized value 2.0 is becoming. You don't do it with as much quantity as he used to do. I think he was doing it like daily, but I really like your approach to visuals. I think you have a very underrated talent at visualizing information. So I'd love to see more of that. I know you do a lot of it for like most people don't know, most of Greg's visuals, I feel like, come from you. You're the artist behind. So I would love to see more of that. I don't know. These type of things, it's kind of like, it just needs it needs a lot of oxygen over time, and it like morphs itself into something, but you definitely have something.
Yeah, it's got legs, man. I really do want it to be something and have it be natural. I do hesitate with the like visualized value comparison, because like it was, if I had to start a dream business, like visualized value might be that business. Like,
yeah,
if I'm honest, like I just am really inspired by Jack and he's become a friend, and I don't want to be like a clone, but I would be, I'm honored to be 2.0. Like if you said like, see that and say that, like that's I'm honored because, I've learned a ton from him and really was like doing a lot of the stuff that he was preaching before. When I first saw visualized value, I was like, this is a language I didn't know I spoke. Like, I was doing the permissionless apprenticeship stuff before he was talking about it. I just didn't frame it like that. So, it's been really cool and really inspirational, just like being close proximity with him as well. I appreciate it. And I need to do more visuals, more writing. I think I need to get on a consistency cadence and just crank.
All right, we'll leave it there. My video is getting laggy. I don't know why. We need to check it. But thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it. A lot of great nuggets in there. I think the bit about school was amazing and super tactical. So appreciate you coming on. We'll definitely keep you in the rotation, have you come on every few months. Appreciate it.
Oh, man. Thank you for having me.
Hell yeah.
Talk soon.
Thank you.
Peace.